Welcome to In the Hive. I'm Roger McDonough. Today on the program, we're continuing our conversations with candidates for statewide office. Last week, we spoke with the Democratic contender for Attorney General, Greg Skordas. This week, it's the incumbent in that office, Republican Attorney General Sean Reyes. These conversations are part of our effort to educate voters in advance of the November 3rd election. Speaking of which, later in the show, State Elections Director Justin Lee gives us a quick and dirty overview of voting during a pandemic. But for now, we'll turn to my conversation with Attorney General Sean Reyes, who's seeking re-election to a third term in office. Though, note that one of those terms was the fulfillment of the final part of the previous Attorney General John Swallow's term, after he resigned amid a scandal, which Reyes and I get into a little bit in the interview. In any case, here's that conversation. Utah Attorney General Sean Reyes, welcome, and thank you for being here.
My pleasure, Roger. It's great to be on with you.
I'd like to start by asking a question I posed to your Democratic opponent, which is admittedly a very broad question, but your position is often referred to as the top law enforcement official in the state. You have significant investigatory authority. Your office has a great deal of power, really. So whose interests are you representing as Attorney General, and what is the philosophy that guides you in your role?
That's a great question, Roger. I represent the people of Utah. I also represent the state agencies of Utah by the Constitution, you know, public officers like the governor and the executive branch members. Sometimes those can be in potential conflict. You know, the governor may want to go a particular route, and my job is to give him the best possible advice. And in some cases, the legislature will pass laws that I may or may not even agree with myself. And it's my obligation, I took a sworn oath, to defend those laws that the will of the people through their representatives has made manifest. And I believe, you know, you can make the argument, well, there's a faction of the people who disagree with those laws. So is the AG representing the state or the people? I try to reconcile those, and really my guiding philosophy is what's right under the law. How is the law written? What was its intent? And, you know, my job is to enforce the law, not to try to make the law or remake the law or legislate by deciding when to enforce the law or when not to enforce the law. Other sort of touchstones for me are, I have a mantra that I've brought from my family and my father, you know, immigrant to this country who worked hard out to live the American dream and teach us how incredibly blessed we are to live in a land of liberty and to never take it for granted. And also law firms and other businesses that have shared this philosophy. It's win the right way. I would rather lose a case or even an election doing things the right way than to win doing them the wrong way, lying, cheating, stealing. Of course, the ultimate goal is to win doing things the right way. And it's a philosophy that I try to impart to all of our professionals in the office, whether they're prosecutors, whether they're civil lawyers, whether they're investigators, law enforcement agents, paralegals, or other professionals. Try to value all of them. I think they all contribute. And I believe the people are best served, again, when decisions are made, not in a partisan way. Decisions are made based on, again, what the law says. And I enforce that. I think that serves the people, whether all of the people in the state agree on a particular approach or not.
Well, decisions not being made in a partisan way, you said, and politics and the AG's office is something that I'd like to explore further. And there are a couple of angles there. One is that candidates for this office end up having to raise money to fund their campaigns. And then because the AG has decision-making authority over who gets investigated and who doesn't get investigated, there's a risk that, whether conscious of it or not, an attorney general might end up treating their political donors differently. So how do you approach separating politics from the office, Sean Reyes?
Well, a few thoughts on that, Roger. Again, the attorney general's office is not unique in that sense of having to raise money. Legislators make the laws that I enforce. The governor signs those into law. The governor has charge over much of the law enforcement element at the state level, right? Department of Public Safety and their own investigative branch. The auditor has vast powers to investigate waste, fraud, and abuse. So I don't think that I'm any different than other elected officials, and certainly I don't think that I'm different than any citizen in terms of being able to have personal political views. But again, as I mentioned before, when I make my decisions about who to investigate, who to prosecute, none of that has to do with, you know, what letter is next to someone's name in terms of partisan politics. I never call the GOP chair of the state and say, what's your input on this? I don't call any donors. Donors know upfront that they're paying for good government, right? And so I'm very upfront. We talk about this with donors. This is not going to buy you any special treatment, any favors. And my team knows that. We've instituted guardrails even on top of that. So not only do we preach this and we talk about this and we're conscious of this, but internally, we have an internal ethics committee. We have a civil review commission. I created, which didn't exist before, a mechanism for those within the office to be able to go outside of the chain of command if they have questions or issues or concerns arise to an outside, called a whistleblower path. All of these are things internal to the office. And then separate and apart from the office, which I've drawn a heavy line of demarcation, you don't see my campaign team at the Capitol. And my office, the policy makers, those who work with me on the professional side, aren't out campaigning. They're two different teams, two different phones, two different laptops, two different teams, so that the people will know that I'm not doing political or personal work on the people's time or the people's dime. Also, that we're not making decisions, critical ones, as you alluded to, because the people have given us so much power, based on who's contributed. So I can say assuredly that for me and my team, we've never treated anyone any differently because they were a donor of any amount to my campaign or supported me in any way.
You know, Utah attorneys general have been on the receiving end of pay-for-play allegations. An investigation into the AG who came before you by the Utah House of Representatives concluded that he, quote, hung a veritable for sale sign on the office door that invited moneyed interests to seek special treatment and favors, unquote. And I bring this up because I wanted to give you a chance to respond to an implicit allegation made by your Democratic opponent on this show last week. He said that that for sale sign hasn't been taken down, and he pointed to donations you received from this fraudulent biofuel scheme company, Washakie Renewable Energy. He says that you didn't choose to prosecute them while federal attorneys did, and the implication there is that you made that choice because of the donation. Utah Attorney General Sean Reyes, your response there.
Yeah, none of that has any substantiation, Roger. It's easy to levy, you know, convenient campaign rhetoric during a campaign. He's not the only one who's done that. I had a convention opponent who raised those issues. But the reality is, if there were anything to that whatsoever, which there isn't, something would have been done by now. You referenced my predecessors, and the stark distinction is that those cases went to investigations, they went to prosecutions, action was taken because they were so egregious. There's nothing in my tenure, my term that we've done that come anywhere close to that. There's nothing that we've done, including the situation with Washakie, that was untoward, that was illegal, and certainly not even unethical. To the contrary, my office and I have received numerous awards, including ones from bipartisan or nonpartisan organizations, lauding us and congratulating us for changing the entire culture and bringing ethics and integrity back to the highest level. Before I was AG, I won numerous awards, including the Young Lawyer of the Year for the United States by the American Bar Association for integrity and ethics, leadership, success in the courtroom. It's what we've brought. And you can talk to many judges. You can talk to many others, even those who go up against us in court. And they will tell you that things have changed in the AG's office for the better. Now, in terms of a specific allegation about Washakie, let me take you back to 2014 when I was, you know, first starting as AG. WashiQ was a very popular company that had contracts with the University of Utah. They were a large sponsor of the Utah Jazz, had contributed to the governor, our current governor, legislators. And when we did our due diligence, it seemed like a very reputable company. And we were honored to be able to receive a donation from them. Again, we were upfront and they knew they weren't going to get any special treatment. They're not going to get any advantage for contributing. And they haven't. The allegations, again, are thin at best. But if I can try to unpack that for a moment.
Sure. If you don't mind my interrupting for just a second, I guess the specific idea is that you had a choice to prosecute and then you chose not to prosecute.
Well, Roger, that's what I was trying to sort of clarify for you, is that the case against them was a federal tax evasion case, right? So we don't have jurisdiction there. The feds had their case open already. The reason why anyone came to us was because the feds, I believe, had executed search warrants on the premises or property of certain of the WashiQ principals, and that became newsworthy. So some people came forward and said, hey, should the AG's office be investigating this also? Well, immediately the feds contacted us and said, hey, we've got this. This is our case. We don't need you on this case. If we needed to, and justice dictated that the AG's office investigate and or prosecute the case, we absolutely would have. We've done that in numerous other instances in other industries where I've received donations from, whether that's the pharmaceutical industry, whether that's the MLM industry. So no one's buying immunity. No one's buying protection. WashiQ wasn't. In fact, my team actually helped the federal government at the end of their case when they were trying to recoup assets for WashiQ. So we worked in cooperation. There was never a question by the federal government, nor the lieutenant governor's office, or anybody who has jurisdiction to look into improprieties, never a concern about my conduct. There was a misunderstanding with the media, and I own that, and I think in our last debate explaining that, when we found out that there was an investigation ongoing by the federal government, one of my staffers had said, hey, instead of returning money, let's go above and beyond, because in case these guys turn out to be bad, we don't want to give the money back to them, we'll put it in an escrow account. And so the media said, that sounds great. He was trying to go, again, above and beyond what the law or anything else required. The problem was, when we checked with our FEC lawyer and our accountant, the money that they had given us 2 years before had already been spent. And our own lawyer said, you can't take new money that donors have given you and segregate it for ostensibly holding in escrow for this other issue. You would be violating campaign laws if you did that. So he didn't do that. We heeded the advice of our counsel. And again, the media felt like we were being disingenuous. We had promised to do something. And so I owned that. My representative said he was going to do something. We didn't do it because we later found out we couldn't do it. But that, again, is nothing close to giving WashiQ a pass or, you know, pay to play. Those are, again, unsubstantiated. And the federal government and those who would be looking at those things or who would have taken action would have done something by now if there was any truth to the matter.
Well, we're low on time, and there are other topics that I'd like to get to here. And one thing you've done that's received a fair amount of attention and that is bound to garner only more attention in the weeks and months ahead is that you signed the state onto a lawsuit challenging the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act. Can you tell us what led you to make that decision?
No, I can't right now, Roger. We made our arguments in our briefing, and Texas is taking the lead on all of that briefing. There have been some questions. Well, the AG's office is spending tens of millions of dollars. We have not. We review the cases. We've spent maybe a few thousand dollars. It's a serious issue of policy. I can definitely say that. But I can't talk about the case itself right now, hopefully sometime soon.
Can I do a sort of follow-up? Okay, without focusing on specifics, maybe, you know, your Democratic opponent says that the passage of Prop 3 expanding Medicaid in the state showed that the people of Utah are behind that health care law because Medicaid expansion was a part of the Affordable Care Act. Is there maybe a general way you can address that? Or, you know, if not, can you maybe talk more broadly about how you decide to sign onto a multi-state lawsuit against a federal law?
Sure. Let me address the latter first. We have opportunities on an almost weekly basis to join my colleagues, Democrat and Republicans, nationwide on a host of different issues that affect my office. I tend to, my philosophy has been, I'm not a policy maker. So I don't weigh in as loudly as some of my predecessors on every law in the state of Utah that I may like or dislike personally or politically, unless it affects my office and my ability to protect the people of Utah. If it keeps me from protecting people from violent crimes, if it keeps me from protecting children from sexual abuse, if it keeps me from protecting teens from taking their own lives, or soccer moms and business dads from the opioid epidemic, then I'm going to weigh in, and I may weigh in forcefully on that. And from time to time, the agencies that I represent as part of my job require me to weigh in in a legal standpoint to talk about the legalities or the potential outcomes of legislation. On a national level, my colleagues and I tend to agree on a whole lot. And what the average listener may not realize either is that the vast majority of what I do as an attorney general is bipartisan or nonpartisan. There are a few wedge issues that I think people, it's inevitable, will have strong feelings about that you have to make decisions on when you're enforcing the law, right? Laws that you didn't yourself pass or create. But for the most part, the job of an AG is, you know, much like a firefighter. You have a building on fire or a home, evacuate the family, get them safe, put out the fire, do your job, do it well, be professional, don't hurt anything else in the process. And so from time to time, I will join with my colleagues. Very often they are issues, again, joined by many Democrats and many Republicans. If you look just in the last couple of months alone at sign-on letters where we're sending strong opinions to Congress, encouraging them to consider certain things while they're passing legislation, or even amicus briefs, which are more substantive. That doesn't mean we're parties necessarily, or in other cases, joining as a party. It's not dictated by politics, dictated by what's in the best interest of Utah and what I think the law requires. So there's times that I part with many of my Republican colleagues because I think things are working well, like the Indian Child Welfare Law in Utah, I think works extremely well for Utah. A lot of Republican states don't like it. I personally have joined with many Democrats in lawsuits to fight against my colleagues. In terms of health care, and your question, I think that the people's response with regard to Medicaid expansion, they believe is a good thing given the circumstances in which they find themselves with the ACA. If you didn't have all of the downside of the ACA, but you could keep many of the things that we all would agree upon that are beneficial from the ACA, which a state could easily do, which the federal government could also do, then you're getting closer to where I would like to see healthcare, back at a local level where average Americans can actually afford, even if they have coverage, they can actually afford with deductibles and with copays to go see a doctor and get care. And that care will be better, higher quality, and more accessible. I don't think that that's what we're getting. And the reason I know that is because I talk to Utahns every day, and I have been for the last 7 years. And the majority of the ones that I talk to are very unhappy. And it's not purely on partisan lines. They're very unhappy with the state of their health care and their health insurance. But it's easy, again, in partisan politics and during elections to try to demonize the opponent by saying, picking the worst possible outcome and saying, well, that's exactly what they want to have happen. It's not true. And hopefully, when I'm able to discuss it more, we can have a longer talk about it.
I will want to do that, yes. We have covered a lot of ground here so far, and there's more that I was hoping to get to, but we are running very low on time. And so, Attorney General Sean Reyes, as I did with your opponent, I will have you just make your pitch for re-election directly to the listeners. The remaining couple of minutes are yours.
Thanks, Roger. You know, I'm a proud conservative, but I work every day with Democrat friends and Republicans at the federal level, at the local level, at the state level. I spend 95% of my time here in the state of Utah. I work a lot of 16 to 18 hour days. I don't think my opponent really understands that. I don't think he's ready to give up his lifestyle to do what it takes to really make this office as successful as we have. We want to continue the momentum, my team and I. It's not just about me. I've got incredible professionals that I've been able to recruit from around the country, from around the state, who have really made this office one that Utah can be proud of again. We attack violent crime, whether that's drug crimes with cartels or human traffickers or child sex predators or pornographers. We go after white collar crime with a vengeance. Many out there say those are victimless crimes, and I would absolutely disagree. I've seen so many lives ruined, entire nest eggs and life savings gone in one bad investment decision. We have been the bulwark against threats to the state of Utah and the AG's office when it comes to protecting against mental behavioral health challenges like teen suicide, teen addictions, teen vaping, the opioid epidemic, which robs more American lives every year than even breast cancer. We fought against other types of serious threats and created resources like the Safe UT app, which has saved countless teen lives, and now we're expanding it out for first responders, military, and hopefully soon all Utahns so they can have that resource. Again, I work my guts out up and down the state.
And Attorney General, I will have to ask you to wrap it up. I'm sorry, we're getting—
No, it's great. I appreciate it, Roger. I would love to win the votes of Utahns for four more years to capitalize on the momentum we built. So thank you. I ask for their vote and yours too, Roger.
Sean Reyes is Attorney General for the state of Utah. He's seeking re-election this November. And Attorney General Reyes, thanks for making time for this today.
Thank you, Roger, for having me on.
Last week on the show, you also heard from Democratic candidate for Attorney General Greg Skordas and from the Democratic gubernatorial nominee Chris Peterson. A quick note that we are trying to nail down an interview with the Republican candidate in that race, Spencer Cox, so stay tuned for that. Now on the show, though, with the election less than 3 weeks away and with ballots arriving in the mailboxes of many Utahns this week, we'll turn to a primer on voting during a pandemic. Justin Lee is the director of elections for the state of Utah, and he says that if there's one thing he wants you to take away about voting in the upcoming election, it's this.
The most important thing I want voters to know is that they should vote, that their vote counts. Far too often people think that, you know, their vote doesn't make an impact, that there's not a competitive race where they live perhaps, but every vote does count and every vote sends a message, so please vote.
Is this the first time that ballots have been sent to every active registered voter in the state? There's a lot of ballots going out. Maybe you can talk about the number of ballots that are being sent through the mail to voters.
So while most counties have run their elections primarily by mail for several cycles now, this will be the first year that every county in Utah is running their election primarily by mail. So every active voter gets a ballot in the mail, and we have more active voters than we've ever had before. We have 1.6 million voters on the rolls right now. So more voters will be getting their ballots in the mail this week than ever before in Utah.
Is the fact that that's happening because of a rule change at the legislature, because of COVID, basically, the pandemic we're living through?
You know, interestingly, the pandemic did not actually affect the number of ballots we're sending out this year. Earlier in the year, in March, we had the presidential primary election right before the pandemic hit. And every county was by mail for that election. So it just was a very fortunate happenstance that the Utah went all by mail the year that it was very good to be all by mail.
The Salt Lake County clerk is urging people to return their ballots early. Is that something that you would recommend as well?
You know, I think there's some really good reasons to send your ballot back in early. The first one is, and I say this a little facetiously, but candidates take you off the lists. They get lists of people who have voted. They take you off the list so you don't get the obnoxious campaign mail anymore. So there is a good reason to vote early. The other thing is it does help us spread out voters so we don't have long lines at the polls on election day. In a pandemic year, you know, we certainly want to socially distance, physically distance. So we encourage people to send in that by mail ballot. And if they send it in early, we'll have more results on election night.
And there's a way for a resident, a voter, an active voter to track their ballots, correct?
Absolutely. If you go to vote.utah.gov, you can put in your information and see where your ballot is at in the process, whether it's been mailed to you, whether it's been sent back to the county clerk, or if it's ready to be counted on election day.
Does it say counted or not counted?
It will. It will say your vote has been counted. Once we get to election day, the votes aren't actually tabulated until then, but it will say that it's counted. And prior to that, you'll know that it's in the possession of the county clerk.
We talked about the fact that you can mail them back in. There are also, there's another way where you could go and drop them off. What is that, Justin Lee?
So drop boxes are a great way to return your ballot. And we have more drop boxes than we've ever had before. We have 160 in the state. Now, as I say that, I should say you want to put it in a drop box in your county. But those drop boxes are available, you know, 24 hours a day until 8 p.m. on election day. So it's a great way to return that ballot. You don't have to worry about postage. You don't have to worry about the postal system. You know it goes directly to the county clerk.
This will sound like an odd question, but in California, I was reading just today that the state Republican Party there had put their own drop boxes out masquerading as official ballot drops. Is there anything like that happening here, I guess, Justin?
So no, we haven't seen any indication of fake drop boxes popping up here in Utah. If we do, we would certainly get law enforcement involved because that would be illegal. You can't, one, impersonate an election official, and two, it's illegal to harvest ballots from voters outside of your immediate, you know, people that live with you and your family, or perhaps if you're in a long-term care facility. But candidates and parties are not allowed to harvest ballots from the general populace.
Okay. How about you? Are you going to vote in person or by mail? How are you going to do it?
I am absolutely voting by mail, and I'm going to vote by mail as soon as my ballot gets in there. I'll do another plug for vote.utah.gov. You can go to the website and you can look up what's going to be on your ballot. We have 7 constitutional amendments. If you don't know what's on those, you can look them up. So as soon as I get that ballot, I'm going to vote the ballot. I'm going to put it straight in a drop box, and I'll be done for this election.
Fantastic. Justin Lee, anything else that you really want to convey to voters before we part ways here?
You know, the last thing I would say is just, you know, in a pandemic year, we want everyone to vote and we want everyone to vote safely. So please put those ballots in drop boxes, vote them through the mail. Only go to those polling locations if you really need additional help. But let's all vote and let's vote safely.
Again, that's Justin Lee, Director of Elections for the State of Utah, wrapping up this edition of In the Hive. We've still got more candidate conversations ahead, as well as a show in the works about a big court case that's playing out over what makes a road, based on an old mining law, as well as a great deal more. Stay tuned. I'm Roger McDonough, and you've been listening to In the Hive from KCPW, a listener-supported, independent public radio resource. Our theme music is by Andrew Shaw. Join us again next week. Both Sides of the Aisle is just ahead.